From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to North America's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. Tomorrow on the coasttocoastam.com website will be a free downloadable version for you of my interview with Larry Haber, the attorney for the alleged time traveler family, John Teeter. It'll be available to you for free. By the way, happy birthday today to my dad, Gabriel. 83 years old. Many more, Dad. Many more. Joshua Warren, Ghost Hunter, rescheduled for next week because extraordinary events require extraordinary measures. So tonight, a Coast to Coast AM special report on the plan to lease shipping operations to the United Arab Emirates. DP World is a company at 6 U.S. ports, and how it affects national security. We will attempt with our experts to at least put this in perspective. First, Honda Motor Company plans to sell a low-cost hybrid car, a version of its popular Fit subcompact, signaling the automaker's long-term commitment to the fuel-sipping powertrain. Japan's third biggest automaker aims to fit the hybrid as early as next year for around, now listen to this price, less than $12,000 for a car. More than the gasoline-only version, as a matter of fact, likely making it the world's first hybrid to cost less than $16,000 with all the options tossed in. The model could be launched in the business year starting April 2007, would be sold globally. A newspaper says that the hybrid would have fuel economy comparable to that of the Honda Insight. Automakers advertise in Japan as getting 82 to 84 miles per gallon. A powerful earthquake struck Mozambique early Thursday morning, shaking buildings and forcing people from hundreds of miles to dash around in the streets looking for safety. Magnitude 7.5 quake. No reports on major injuries. The tremor was felt also in neighboring Zimbabwe, as far south as South Africa, 800 miles away. In London, a group of armed robbers impersonating police officers tied up employees at the Bank of England and stole $44 million. And off they went. A New York musician has tested positive for anthrax, and authorities say that it came from unprocessed animal skins used to make traditional African drum instruments. He's in stable condition at a Pennsylvania hospital. Anthrax bacteria lie dormant in tough cells called spores until conditions are favorable for them to infect animals or humans. The 44-year-old man recently traveled to Africa, where he bought animal hides and took them back to New York City to make drums. Last night, while we were on Coast to Coast, insurgents posing as police destroyed the Golden Dome of one of Iraq's holiest Shiite shrines, setting off now an unprecedented spasm of sectarian violence, angry crowds throughout the streets, at least 19 people dead already. The shrine, 1,200 years old. They say that Iraq could be in the middle now of an all-out civil war if this continues. Our top story, though, President Bush apparently now was unaware that a controversial deal to sell shipping operations at six major U.S. seaports to a United Arab Emirates-owned firm was in the works until it was approved by his administration. After the president defended the deal Tuesday and threatened to use his veto power against any congressional legislation aimed at stalling it, the administration also said that it should have briefed Congress sooner about the transaction, which has triggered a major political backlash among Republicans and Democrats. And on the heels of all this, the Bush administration secretly required this company in the United Arab Emirates to cooperate with future U.S. investigations before approving its takeover of operations of the ports. They say as part of the $6.8 billion purchase, the state-owned Dubai Ports World agreed to reveal records on demand about foreign operational direction of its business at U.S. ports. Those records broadly include details about the design, maintenance, or operation of ports and equipment. However, the administration did not require Dubai Ports to keep copies of business records on U.S. soil where they would be subject to court orders. It also did not require the company to designate an American citizen to accommodate U.S. government requests. Outside legal experts said such obligations are attached to U.S. approvals of foreign sales in other industries, but not in this case. Now, temporarily shutting down all the airports after 9/11, after those terrorist attacks, crippled for a while the U.S. economy. Now, in testimony before a Senate subcommittee, Captain William Shupert, the Transportation Department's maritime administrator, before he was replaced, said that an attack on even one ship would probably force the closure of all 361 ports for months. And he says that we would have to shut down our ports for 4 months just to check all the containers. Now, containers are 40-foot sea and land containers, thousands of which arrive at U.S. seaports every day. In a moment, we're going to talk with Captain Kelly Sweeney about this entire situation. He is a master mariner. We'll have his interview in a moment on Coast to Coast AM as we continue with our special report of the leasing of these 6 U.S. ports to the United Arab Emirates. Each of our special guests tonight have their own respective websites. They're all on coasttocoastam.com. There is a direct link. Captain Kelly Sweeney is a master mariner. He holds the highest captain's license as a merchant mariner and can have. For the past 5 years, he's been a contributing editor of the Pacific Maritime, one of the nation's leading maritime magazines, and authored a book on authentic modern sea stories. He has served as an officer on nearly 40 ocean-going vessels and still goes to sea for a living. He's our special guest this half hour on Coast to Coast. Captain, thanks for coming on at this short notice. I appreciate it.
Ahoy, George, to you and all your listeners.
Likewise. Before I ask you a handful of questions, I just want to get your overall perspective of this entire situation with this United Arab Emirates situation and these 6 U.S. ports. How do you feel about it? What can you shed?
George, it's a security risk, but not for the reasons that are being presented or passed around, in the stories about this event.
Okay, how so?
Well, I think we need to have, if I may, a minute or so to at least discuss a little bit about how ports work in
sure,
the U.S.
Sure, please.
Now, maritime ports are places where U.S. and foreign ships come to unload their cargo or passengers from other places and, of course, load cargo or passengers and take them elsewhere. And the ports consist of many docks where ships unload and load. And each dock or set of docks, there is a terminal that runs the operation for these docks. Now, U.S. ports are owned by the public. The land, the docks, the terminals are owned by the ports, which are owned by the public.
Okay.
The difference in the various ports in the U.S. is basically how they are operated. The first is an operating port, which basically all the workers at the terminal are employees of the port, U.S. citizens who work directly for the port, sort of like civil service employees.
Sure.
The other type of port is what I call a landlord port, and that's like the port, for example, of Newark in this Dubai situation.
Okay, now we've got 361 ports.
We do.
Around this country. How many of them are run by foreign companies or foreign organizations? Do we know?
The ports themselves are owned by the public and are run by U.S. citizens. But in a situation, let's say, for like this landlord port of Newark, there are terminals at the dock and docks at these ports that are essentially leased to companies. And sometimes there are American companies, like in your area down in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
There is Matson, which runs steadily between the West Coast and Hawaii. And that's an American company with an American, and they actually, you know, have their own terminal in the port.
All right.
The port of L.A. and Long Beach, though, has a number of foreign-owned companies, some U.S. subsidiary companies that operate the terminals in those ports. And there are, even just in your area alone, there's Danish, Korean, Taiwanese, Chinese, Japanese, lots of different U.S. subsidiaries.
Was there a time when these terminals were operated by only U.S. companies ever?
Well, I think that there was a time when it was mainly that way, but in the especially in the 80s, there began a proliferation of U.S. Subsidiary companies that were operating these terminals in American ports, that the head office was somewhere else.
Okay. But
now, there are still Americans that are operating these terminals day to day, and if there are any foreign employees that are that work there officially, they have a green card and are scrutinized by immigration before they come in. But these cargo terminals, in this Dubai situation and throughout the U.S., I believe every cargo terminal is a security risk. And that's because the security checks, the background checks for the people working at the terminals are left up to the individual company.
Ah, okay.
Not a government agency. Any company could hire a U.S. citizen who lied to them and they didn't do a good background check on them, or worse yet, knowingly allow, let's say, for example, an Al-Qaeda sympathizer to work at one of the terminals. And that's why, in my opinion, we need to have government background checks for anybody, for everybody who works at a marine terminal or goes through a marine terminal. And last year, the Transportation Security Administration had the chance to do that, and they dropped the ball.
So when they're saying this company is not going to get involved in the security of these ports, that's basically not telling us the whole story. Because if what I hear you correctly, Captain, is these companies have the ability then to hire their own employees and workers, and if they're not doing the proper background check, some people who may be so-called terrorists could get hired by these companies, right?
That is absolutely true. The foreign companies, like I said, the modus operandi that's used these days is that they have a U.S. subsidiary company that runs their terminals. All the ports do is lease the land and the docks. But there's a minimum level of government security regulations. But beyond that, it is left up to the individual terminal owners or operators, in this case the operators, to develop their own security program, their own background checks. And as far as I'm concerned, that has to stop. We need to have background checks conducted by our government. And like I said, last year, the Transportation Security Administration had the chance to do that, and they dropped the ball, and we're not doing it.
So whether it's a British-run company or an American-run company or an United Arab Emirates-run company, the threat then, the risk, is still the same.
Absolutely. There's no question.
Now,
no question at all.
These containers that come into our 361 ports, and they're coming in all the time. One of the dangers, Captain, that has us all concerned is that how do we know if some rogue country or some terrorist group plops in some nuclear weapon or some other device in one of these containers and gets them to our shores and blows it up? How do we know? How can we prevent that?
Well, George, I think the terrible answer to that would be when it happened. Every day, every few days, there are millions of cargo containers that come into the U.S. by foreign ships mainly, but by a few American ships as well. And only about 3 out of every 100 are opened up and closely screened. The rest undergo minimal checks, and in some cases, the checks are left completely up to the companies that are importing the goods, and they have a fast-track program where they are essentially allowed to go through, which concerns me greatly.
Now, let me ask you this, Captain, if you can answer it. How can the president say that he wasn't aware of this deal until it was already approved when on January 24th, he named a person by the name of David Sanborn, who was an executive with DP Worlds, to become the next maritime administrator for this country? How could he say he wasn't aware of this?
Well, George, I can't answer that, but it is amazing to me, to tell you the truth, that somebody in Mr. Sanborn's position could be nominated and this wouldn't be checked out.
I know it. and not know that his company was about ready to take advantage of a major port enterprise, the British firm, which would then control the 6 U.S. ports.
Well, the Dubai Ports World has been buying up various terminal companies throughout North America and throughout the world, especially in Asia and Europe. I believe that they have the Centerm terminal in Vancouver, B.C. I don't think a lot of Canadians know that, but I was talking with a friend of mine about that recently.
This deal would make him the third largest port company in the world.
That's true.
If they do this deal with the English people, if they close on it and buy that company.
That's true.
Now, a lot of people are saying, look, you know, you're taking advantage of an ally out there on terrorism. The one problem is that, one, we really don't know who this Dubai Ports World really is, because this isn't a private, this isn't a company owned by, you know, this is run by the Emirates, isn't it?
It's a privately owned company from the royal family. And to tell you the truth, George, I think that there are three areas where we really need to shore up our maritime security, because it's sorely lacking, in my opinion. The first one, as I said, we need to do background checks and have government background checks. The second is, and I just discussed this in my book in a story called License, I detail how a terrorist posing as a foreign crew member using fraudulent documents, it would be so easy to come in a foreign ship to an American port and cause a terrible tragedy. We need to have increased Coast Guard inspections. We have some Coast Guard inspections now, but they are overworked and they do a great job, but they need more resources. I would like to see every foreign vessel that comes into our ports inspected thoroughly and boarded each time it comes in before it comes into our ports. And I would like to see every container screened that comes in from another place through what is called, and we have the technology to do this, and it's being used at large ports like Los Angeles now in certain terminals in the port, that is a passive screening for radioactivity of the containers that go through. It doesn't cause but a moment's delay, if that, the trucks drive through it. It's like a large screening system that you undergo when you board the terminal at an airport.
Would you tell Congress tonight, if many of them are listening to this program worldwide, to at least temporarily stop this deal? Would that be your recommendation?
I think that it's at the face value, it needs to be scrutinized. But the foreign operations and operators at American ports is so commonplace, it's almost hard to single these people out. Because, like I said, there are so many that throughout our country that's that way now. I would like to see members of Congress and our administration step up port security in general, and on these particular three things that I said. So regardless of who was operating the terminals at various ports, they would be secure.
Can that be done, exactly what you recommended, these three steps?
Absolutely. We have the technology. We have the people to do it. And all we need to do is to have the allocation of money. As I said, the Transportation Security Administration had the chance to do what's called the Transportation Workers Identification Card for everybody who came on the terminals. And last year, they dropped the program and dropped the ball.
Captain, you should be the new maritime administrator, not the guy from the DP World's company.
Well, I enjoy going to sea, George. I think that's a desk job. I prefer to stay out at sea.
Captain, what does the future hold then on this entire situation? It's a nightmare. It's a bad public relations move. What's your gut tell you? Is it going to go through?
I think that there'll be a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth, but I think ultimately it's going to go through, George.
You do believe that.
And I hope, though, that what it does is that it spurs on the improvements in maritime security which are needed. I hope this highlights it for the public. And I tell you the truth, George, that's one reason I wrote my book, was because to show the citizens of our country the importance of the merchant marine and how this could happen. Maritime terrorism, it's a reality. There's a lot of us who think the next 9/11 would occur by ship, and I hope that never happens.
Name of the book again, and how do you get it, Captain?
George, your listeners, if they want to know more about the merchant marine industry and about maritime terrorism, they can get my book, From the Bridge, Authentic Modern Sea Stories, at Amazon.com. Now, Sea Stories, the title's a little misleading. These are my own experiences. And they can also find my current article, which happens to be about the merchant marine support of our troops in Iraq, at www.pacmar.com. And that's something I think that needs to be highlighted, and they can see my current article there at pacmar.com.
Well, Captain, I've got to tell you, of everything that I've heard around the country over the last couple days, and we were one of the first, if not the first, to break this story last week, you have shed the best light on this particular subject than anybody I've heard. I want to thank you for that.
And, George, and I want to thank you because you brought this story forward. When I happen to be ashore right now, I won't be shipping out probably till next month, and I heard that with my lovely wife, and I said, George is right on with this. I was so happy that you brought this up, George, and I've been honored to be on there, and I hope that people can read From the Bridge and find out more about what's going on at sea, and they can even find out about my own personal piracy experience.
Well, I've got to tell you, it's a great story. Captain, thanks so much. We'll be back with more in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. By the way, Lex, our webmaster, tells me his father, Don, will be 83 next week as well. So happy birthday to you, Don. How about that? My father's 83. Lex's father's 83. They're getting up there, aren't they? I don't know if anybody on our predictions DVD or television show said anything about this situation we're talking about tonight. But this is available to you when you go to the www.predictions.tv website. You can pick up the DVD if you are so inclined, or you can simply watch the program on your computer by, again, going to predictions.tv. Cyber war columnist Charles R. Smith is one of America's leading experts on cyber technology and its implications for war, terrorism, privacy, and everyday technology, and how it interacts with our lives. He is an exclusive columnist for Newsmax.com as its cyber war expert and currently president and CEO of Soft War, his own consulting company, a regular guest on Coast to Coast AM. Charles, what kind of a mess are we getting into now on this one?
Well, you know, it may be less of a mess than you actually think.
Tell me why, in your opinion.
Well, I'm kind of skeptical about what's going on because the mainstream media, better known as MSM, has jumped so hardly on this bandwagon. The only argument that I've ever been able to capture out of their nature on this is that this is an Arab company, the Dubai firm that is intending to go in and take over management of six of the major ports here. And, you know, my problem is that as an investigative journalist, when I go in and do a story on a company that I find of dubious value, the very first thing I do is try to get some documentation, not necessarily on its point of origin, but on who its business partners are, its trading practices, its past history.
Absolutely.
And as you well know, for example, Hutchison Whampoa, the current leaser of both ends of the Panama Canal, attempted to come in and get the port of Long Beach.
And that was under Clinton's administration,
right? And when we went through those, both the Panama Canal issue as well as the Long Beach issue, we reviewed Hutchison Whampoa, its owner, the business practices, the characteristics of the company, and discovered, lo and behold, that, sure, the company is based in China, but it also had very close ties to the Chinese military. In fact, more than just very close ties, they were actually in business with the Chinese military. They were a facilitator. They actually hired, say, military attaches. For example, the Hutchison Whampoa manager in Panama turned out to be the former military attache. 21% of the money that went for the Panama deal came from a company called China Resources, which had teamed up with Hutchison Whampoa. China Resources is actually owned and operated by the Chinese Military Intelligence Department. The owner of Hutchison Whampoa, Li Keqing, has consistently helped the Chinese military obtain advanced technology facilitated their efforts to expand into the West. I have documented circumstances where Li Keqing helped provide financing for the Chinese military to obtain a Hughes satellite, things like that. So once we went back through what Hutchison Whampoa was, who owned it, how they operated, we were able to point back and say, okay, these guys are really close to the PLA, and we can prove it in documentation. They're in business with the Chinese Army, and not only did I write it up, but folks like the Rand Corporation wrote that up.
Now, when Carter basically handed over the Panama Canal, did we know, for example, that Chinese companies would be taking over the ends of the canal?
No, but we did. What we did know was that the Panamanians would be making the decision as to who should or should not bid and make the process for the leasing and operations on these ports and facilities. In short, we were trusting the Panamanian government to make the right decision as to who should and should not run it.
Who probably got bought off.
Probably is sort of an underestimation.
I was being nice.
You were being very kind. There was a lot of money floating around, and the American companies essentially decided to withdraw from the bidding because they knew they could not compete under our current law here in the United States, which forbids us paying bribes in order to obtain contracts.
What about this situation, Charles, with DP World? I mean, is it possible that there's been a lot of money flowing to get this thing done and approved? I mean, we can't prove it. We can't name names. But, I mean, it's strange. I mean, why would this company, run by the United Arab Emirates, primarily Dubai, why would they want control of six ports and then the rest of whatever this British company controls across the world? Why would they want it, first of all? Is there that much money in it? And then do they grease the palms of people in order to get this stuff approved?
The answer is yes and perhaps yes. I can't say. I'm already in my process of investigating them and their management, ownership, etc. Yeah, there's a lot of money in this, and it's a very competitive market. Obviously, they have bought out a British firm, and that is what has brought them to our shoreline. The flip side of this is that at least at this point, and this is both from the business end as well as from the security end, I have yet to run into any major questions revolving around their operations around the world, their companies, their business associations. You know, I don't see anyone from Al-Qaeda sitting on their board. I don't see any money flowing from them to the Taliban.
But would you?
It's a possibility. That's something that needs to be investigated if it hasn't already. There's two points here. The United Arab Emirates is actually a very close ally of the United States, militarily speaking. We actually have sold to them some of the most advanced military equipment available. In fact, fighter jets even more advanced than we're selling to our own U.S. Air Force.
Do you think this deal could affect our military relationship with the United Arab Emirates?
It's possible. They are certainly watching with great interest as to how we are going to deal with this. If we reject the offer simply because they are an Arab company without any real backing, I am certain that there will be a backlash. The UAE has not only provided us with air bases and naval port facilities in the war with Iraq as well as with Afghanistan, they have also provided us with exclusive control of facilities for the Global Hawk unmanned aerial vehicle, which has been patrolling the skies not only over Iraq, but again, Afghanistan. I mean, these guys have worked not only very closely with us, they've bent over backwards, even made themselves a target in order to help us out. And of course, I still have my own skepticism from the point of view that, this could become a Saudi type affair where we're although we may be dealing with legitimate government entities at one end, are we creating more enemies within their own nation who are opposed to us, radicals? I would like to see a definitive answer in the area of, the who are the board, who are the ownership, who are the management, and their management history. Mm-hmm. I want to see those kinds of answers come out.
Would you, at this point, tell Congress, pass legislation, stop this deal, even if it's temporarily, stop the deal until we can figure out what's going on?
Actually, I would urge the administration to say, to put a cooling period
you
on
would.
It, which they can do arbitrarily without legislation to answer these questions.
It would be the smart thing for this administration to do.
Right now, it obviously is a very nasty political baseball for Bush, because simply by playing this "it's an Arab company" card, his opposition has been able to say, okay, he's soft on terrorism, which is really perhaps not the case. See, I have to be very careful about how this is portrayed. There was a company I think in 2004 that I investigated here in the United States that did election contracting with the Department of Defense. And they were a privately owned firm, and their biggest financial backer was a so-called Saudi company. Well, when I went behind the so-called Saudi company and actually investigated who owned it, I found that the ownership was actually based in Yemen.
Oh, that's one of the biggest terrorist spots.
Right. And now the fun part about this is that as soon as it was published that the actual ownership was in Yemen, 3 days later, the Yemeni, who actually was the financial backer, suddenly ejected and literally dumped his shares and left the country. It was as if they didn't want anyone to go proceed any further,
right,
or have any reason to proceed any further.
Is it possible? The president said today, I don't know why he didn't say this a few days ago, but he said today that he wasn't aware of this deal until it was done and it came to him. Now, how can that be when a month ago he nominated a guy from DP World to head up the Maritime Administration, part of the Department of Transportation? He nominated him, unless he doesn't even see his nominations. I can't believe that. How would he not know that this was in the works?
Well, generally, these kinds of decisions are made at the board level. And, this was, again, like with the Hutchinson-Whampoa deal under the Bush administration, where Hutchinson-Whampoa came over here and said, we want to buy the remainders of a fiber optic company, Global Crossing. And suddenly it became very well known that, Hutchinson-Whampoa not only had close connections with the Chinese army, they were buddy-buddies, and that Global Crossing had secure communications contracts with the Department of Defense, and a Bush advisor, a very prominent person, also had a major contract with the Global Crossing firm to see that the deal with Hutchinson-Whampoa went through. And I even got a wonderful interview with the gentleman who suddenly, when I was talking to him, was not aware of Hutchinson's past dealings. And I found that very hard to believe, because he was being paid millions of dollars to represent Global Crossing and make sure the deal went through. Well, obviously, the deal went into the National Security Board, which is not controlled by Bush, and then eventually was rejected, much to the dismay of course, the Bush administration official who lost money on the deal. Oops, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I promised it, but it just didn't happen.
Well, you do your job. And I made it pretty clear, even though my article was soft on him, that he really didn't do his job, because he was not aware that Li Keqing was in business with the Chinese army. When you have these things documented, that's where it starts to hurt.
Well, Charles, when you think about what's happening at our borders, you think of now what's happening at our ports and the vulnerability that this country faces all around the country. I think the issue now is not just necessarily this UAE company, but the issue is what are we going to do as a nation to stop this, to clean it up? We just had Captain Sweeney on last half hour, who had three major points that he thinks need to be implemented immediately to help shore up these ports. I think the big issue that Congress should be deciding right now is how are we going to make this country safe?
Well, there's absolutely no question that our porous borders need to be addressed. And, you know, again, this brings up a pretty thorny issue for Bush because he's taken attack that has isolated himself even from members of his own party on issues such as immigration.
And this one, his own party, though they've slowed down a little bit today, I mean, they want to, you know, implement legislation to stop this deal right now.
Well, you know, once again, we're suffering from the incumbent's disease, which is I cannot be defeated. And he has to realize there are members in Congress and the Senate who are saying, I got to get reelected this year.
Is there an arrogance over this situation with the president? I felt that yesterday.
But at the same time, this is a fairly mild case in comparison to many past residents in the White House. I just have to, you know, look at it from the point of view that perhaps we need to step back, and the opponents to this deal have to come forward with some solid evidence that this company is engaged in nefarious activities at some point. My comparison here with Hutchinson Whampoa, the documentation when they were attempting to deal with ports here in the United States came out, and I've got it on my desk, where the Drug Enforcement Administration and Customs raised serious issues about their management of ports and sudden increases in activity of organized crime operations.
What is China doing, Charles? Who's controlling their ports?
Everything south of Guangzhou is controlled by Li Keqing and Hutchinson Whampoa. That's an exclusive deal. You have to understand the Chinese billionaire who owns Hutchinson Whampoa just happens to be in business with the son of Jiang Zemin, the former president. They're developing real estate in all places, Tiananmen Square. It's so sweet. The Chinese, in comparison here, I mean, if this was Hutchinson Whampoa making this, I would be the first guy jumping up and down.
Sure.
I have contacts in both law enforcement, customs, intelligence, and similar organizations globally. And at this point, you know, they're saying, well, we've dealt with these guys, the Dubai company, before. They always seem to be on the up and up. They've taken immediate steps to correct any problems we've ever asked them to do. And we never have any real security problems with these guys. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that there might be something else behind the scenes. We need to look at that, which is why I urge the administration, okay, step back. Let's, you know, get the UAE guys over here. They do have, again, another point. The UAE has very Western-style disclosure laws about ownership and about operations, especially with the companies that are working abroad. And that's because of a very close working relationship with the Brits. Yemen, when I did the investigation over there, certainly did not have that same kind of the legal requirements internally that you had to actually identify yourself if you owned a major business doing millions of dollars of foreign exchange. In short, you could be Osama bin Laden, and because of the paperwork that they've established, they could hide it that way. UAE, I don't think they're going to have that kind of a problem. One of the things I have to emphasize here, especially with the United Arab Emirates, is our military relationship. I've had some dealings with folks at the UAE embassy, but it wasn't on this subject at all. What it was is John Huang, in the Clinton administration, had documents on military sales to the UAE. I'm talking about jet fighters, top-of-the-line F-16s, frigates,
sure,
missile systems, the whole spiel. The guys at the UAE embassy were not upset that Huang had these. I mean, they weren't upset that I had these documents. They were upset that John Huang had the documents. And the issue they raised with me was, you know, when we negotiated with the U.S. and the U.S. government on these deals, we made sure to give them full reassurance of the security of the value of this military equipment. We let the United States say, you know, you keep the source code to all the computer operations on the F-16s because you want to keep them secure and proprietary to yourself. So they bent over backwards when they purchased these weapons to make sure that our security assurances were taken care of.
All right. Well, we're going to keep monitoring this, Charles. We're out of time. Charles R. Smith, website, softwar.net. Everything's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Charles, thanks for being on the program. I'll be right back with Stephen Quayle. Is there an Illuminati angle to all of this?